Hi. Okay. So, hello, everybody. And here we are for our 11th Practical Work on Self work group. And I'd like to welcome everybody for showing up. And as you new people to the telephone may like to know, you can star 6 to mute yourself or star 6 to unmute yourself in order to speak. We have some exciting material to go over tonight. And that being said, I'll turn things over to David.
Okay, I thank you for that. Is Path World on the computer?
Not that I know of.
Okay. And okay, what I wanted to just take a quick minute and give people an update on what's going on with me and my mother's passing, which did we talk about that last week?
Yes.
It was last week. Good. And so I've been down there and back and have mostly in a case at this stage, a lot of what's going on is just the practical functioning of that end of life event. But I thought it'd be interesting to share a couple of things that are going to occur. We're going to actually have a Catholic Mass on Monday at 10 a.m. and I will be speaking at the end of the Mass and speaking about my mother's life and two things that I thought might be of interest to the group. One is that I'm going to be addressing the issue of that basically it's going to end with the phrase that she had a life well lived. But an interesting part that I'm also going to share, all of this in the context of it being in a Catholic, basically in the church during the Mass. Actually, probably the Mass will be technically ended, and then I'll speak. But I also want to address something about memory. And in the memory, like there were memories that were unique to my mother and I. In other words, actual events that, both events that we shared together, but also events that we participated in together, where we had a shared memory. Now, with her passing, in a sense, that's by necessity gone, because that half of it isn't there. So there's a certain element of that memory that is now incumbent upon me to curate. And I hold that. And I hold that to carry forward as it may be needed or not, or to be passed on to my family. Anyway, that'll happen on Monday, and I'll give you a post-celebration minute on the next Wednesday's talk as well. Anyway, I just wanted to do that, Teresa, if that's okay, and we can dive wherever you'd like to dive.
Okay, let's start with a comment that we had from last week from Susan. And Susan, if you'd like to unmute yourself, I'd like to start here because Susan's been with us for some time, but she hasn't spoken up, and I'm excited that she's ready to speak up.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Hi, Susan.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was talking to Teresa last week. It's important to me that my spiritual practice reinforce my intent to be in and operate from my heart. And as I read the practical work on self and I work with the exercises, I'm just wondering if there is a way to incorporate heart in this process of transforming our biological machine. Because to me, machine and heart don't quite appear to be able to coexist. So I was wondering if you could address where heart comes into play with these practices.
Yeah, we can. Absolutely. Let me make a bit of a comment. Do you want me to, does anybody else want to start off on it, or?
You go ahead and start, and then people can chime in as they see fit.
One of the things, Susan, that there's another book, there's a number of books in the series that EJ has written and made available, and the Practical Work on Self book that we're working with now, Practical Work on Self, is field manual. It's a how to bring some of those concepts forward. One of the other books that we worked with during the last year, actually, was a book called The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus. And one of the processes that's critical to the idea of awakening the machine is a interplay between what we call the essential self and the mechanical body, so to speak, the mechanical human biological machine. That interplay comes about through the activation of attention. So if we pay attention to ourselves in a certain manner, it activates the machine. And in that book, the juice for that, the passion, the power, comes from a concept called adoration. It's hard for me to know specifically what you mean by the heart. That's something that in time we can get to learn about each other. But in order for the practice of awakening the machine to go to the next level, one has to be able to activate the adoration. And in a certain way, that we can say that maybe is somehow related to what you mean by the heart. That's all I have.
Just one moment. I know, David, you wanted to know if Path World was here. Yes, Path World is here, and Molly is also here. So,
okay, good.
Susan, did that answer your question, or do you need more on that?
I like this concept of adoration. I guess it's just a matter of, I don't know if I'm really 100% clear how you bring that in with these practices. I mean, at this point, when I'm doing the practices, it just feels more mental because I am working on the awareness and trying to enhance my awareness, but I don't feel my heart in it. And I guess that's the piece that's missing for me. I don't know if that makes sense.
Of course it makes sense. I have a comment on it, but I'd like to see what David has to say first.
Well, if the exercises, I'm not sure what you've been doing or what exercises you've done, but if they remain mental for you, they'll become dry, and it won't be something, there won't be an inner passion, in a sense, to move forward with it. It springs from... In a certain way, it has to spring from a passion in your heart that is pretty deep-seated. And we're also talking about waking up in a new manner. So for me, this is a very, very heartfelt path. And over the years, it has worked out to be that way. And I'm not quite sure how I can communicate that to you.
So, Susan, when I do the exercises such as the pond exercise or, you know, parting the waters, you know that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I find is that what motivates me to do it some of the time is particular emotions that come up. And when those emotions come up, those are not real emotions, they're automatic reactions or triggers. So when I'm doing the pond exercise, the natural place for me to focus is on my sensations in my heart. I will notice perhaps feelings of disturbance there when I'm triggered, or even physical pain in my chest when unpleasant emotions are present. And as I feel into myself and feel into my sensations in order to open myself more fully, in that process, I find that that naturally puts me in the heart in terms of how I believe that you're describing it.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
That helps. Does that do it for you, or do you need to ask another question or to have more insight into that?
No, I think that does it for me.
So it's only analytical when you're thinking about doing the exercises. When you're actually doing them, it relies on feeling, both sensing in the body and the interface between sensing in the body and how your inner state is informing your feeling state, both through sensation and through emotion. So when you do the exercises, you're going more deeply into feeling and sensation, and the heart, as you're describing it, comes into play in that process.
I do feel that, and I think the feeling I get the most is just this struggle. I can feel that automatic, the way our body just wants to go, and that struggle to have some awareness, and you can have that for just a short time, and then it's hard to keep that going.
Yeah.
And it's just that struggle.
Well, in the next couple of chapters, we're going to discuss something called sensing. And I think, I don't know when that is, one or two or three chapters from now, but that might address some sense of what you're talking about. There's no question that we're talking about a form of struggle. Hopefully that struggle is engendering something that is good for us. It's food, it's inner food that we're working with. So just stick with it a little bit, and maybe it'll help. I know the question helps all of us, but I appreciate you bringing it up.
Oh, I thank you very much. I very much enjoy these classes, and I'm just kind of riveted, and don't even want to take a break from the computer to go use the bathroom. So it's great. Thank you.
I'm the same way. I'm riveted, and I've been doing it for a couple of years now, so.
So the struggle actually produces energy that helps us to awaken. We've been talking about that in a few of the classes. So Silverdale has a comment on topic. In this teaching, we're comprised of three centers. One center, the lowest, is perceived in its totality as our historical personality. In this work, we try to activate the other two centers, one of which is characterized as our higher thinking. PWOS is designed to help activate the higher thinking and higher feeling centers, which is also called real feeling rather than just the automated reaction type.
The thank you for reading that. I want to comment on something else that Susan said that affects me. Is she says, I'm riveted. Well, I'm riveted too. And what is it that's so riveting about doing this kind of work together? It's the doing it together part that is compelling for me. And that element that is riveting, let's just put it, that's where I come from. And for me, that's very associated with what I'm calling my heart center. So there you go. Or there you have it. Or that's all.
Or nicely done.
Yeah. Are we still on harmless whim?
Pardon me?
Are we still on the chapter of harmless whim?
No. We're on the chapter of mentation. Now, who spoke? Female spoke?
Me, Leona. I just wanted to come in. I wanted to say I just came in. I listened to the last little bit with Susan. And so I didn't get in on the first connection, the first on what you said at the beginning. So I kind of just came in, and I just want to introduce myself and say that I'm here.
Thank you very much, Leona. It's nice to have you with us.
And I'd like to say a little bit about, I've been here with you in the last two or three times. And have not said a word. I don't even think I've introduced myself. And I was really quite curious about how come I'm not able to speak, I'm not able to interject, I'm not able to understand what it is that I want to do here and why I'm here and what's going on with me. And so I talked to Teresa a little bit about it, and I'm aware that, like, the context of what's being said and how I'm reacting to it, I've been more reacting to what's being said than to myself, and to understanding what it is inside of me that's reacting, or what it is inside of me that's responding, or what it is inside of me that's trying to understand. And so when you say riveted, I am aware of how curious I've become on how I've not been able to respond. Like, the word riveted is fits that. Like, it's just like I'm listening, and I was not able to in any way interject any kind of thought. It's like my thoughts were gone.
Ah, interesting.
Totally gone.
I don't know you, but first of all, may I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Are you in Canada?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. We're now officially international.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes when there's two ways to take that, I guess. Sometimes I'm riveted and my normal mental chatter just flies out of my brain. It's just not there. And I'm just kind of there. I'm just being there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just a delight in itself. But here you are, very articulate and talking away, and it sounds pretty good to me.
Well, it's what I came to was the understanding in all of that kind of struggle, because it was a struggle for me. In the struggle, what I came to was that I was more interested in what, like, say, you and Teresa, and I think there was another man speaking one night, trying to understand what you were saying rather than trying to understand how I was responding.
Okay. That's probably with Silverdale.
So yeah, tell us why that was a struggle for you. What was the process of struggle?
Was it a struggle?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was a struggle in the sense that I couldn't understand how come. There was a part of me, so I'm in my part self. So I'm in my place where we're talked about in the book, where you can be in part, like parts of yourself struggle with each other, and there's a being that just is being. But I wasn't just being. There was a part of me that was struggling. There was a part of me that was thinking, you know, I should be able to say something here. And also, there was another part of me that was thinking, nobody knows I'm even on the line. I felt like I was being, eavesdropping.
How did you feel about eavesdropping?
We call that lurking.
Yeah, lurking. Lurking is a better word. Lurking is a better word. Because it felt lurking. Lurking is a better word. It felt like that. It felt like I was listening in on somebody's conversation, or I was, you know, like sometimes I'd walk by houses and I'd look in at people having their dinners and stuff. It's like I'm looking in at somebody else's at somebody else's enjoyment or something. And
just don't look in the bedroom window.
Yeah, and not even be there. But it was what was so interesting for me, and in some ways so kind of exciting, is that I didn't really need to understand what either of you were saying.
Yeah, can you expand on that? That particular phrase.
I needed to understand why I was struggling with it. Not so much why I was struggling. I needed to understand the senses that was going on in me, the struggle that was going on. I needed to know that. I needed to be totally in that in myself.
Yeah.
And articulate that in some way. Talk about that in some way.
You know, I just, this may be way off topic, okay, but I'm going to say it anyway, but sometimes I know I don't understand what's going on, and I just want to participate. There's something about the mood that's created that I want to be part of, and I know that sometimes it's out of my mouth that stuff comes, and so be it, you know. But I guess I get the enjoyment of just being together. And
yeah.
So there's a whole element for me that's just that. That's like the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Jackie hiding in the corner right now, who hasn't said anything at all.
Jackie has.
Oh, she's on the phone too.
Yeah.
So, Leona, is there more?
I'm actually just wondering about Jackie.
What are you wondering about Jackie?
Well, you just said Jackie's here on the phone. So I was just waiting to see if she would say something at all.
I'm lurking.
Oh, good. That's a nice place to be. I understand.
But I understand what you're saying.
I love that. I'm ready to go into the chapter.
Okay. And we have a comment or a couple comments online. And now you people online know that the phone people really exist. So Leah said, so is one of the overall points of this exploration, to create a struggle, to create the energy to wake the machine? Absolutely, yes.
Good for you. Who's this? Who said that?
Townsie girl, Leah.
Townsie girl?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Wait, is that the same as Arizona?
Yeah.
Ah.
And then for a pause is jonesing after some words from Silverdale, although she said it differently. And then Sama said, yes, and to observe the machine, know thyself, know your triggers, your chronic, your limits, to recognize who you are. Wow, there's a typo there. Getting close. For a pause, I love the idea that you're sharing your thoughts and not lurking anymore. Now you're a part of the sharing.
Yeah.
I love that too. It's really wonderful that tonight that everyone's come forward and let us hear you and feel you more directly so we can find you in our thoughts in our ongoing exploration of the chapter. That being said, being out of comments, we can go into the chapter or we can go into Silverdale's comment about the chapter, which she put online for us, which is great. So, Silverdale, you can type in on the computer. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to say it, or do you want to read it yourself? I need to go back to the screen and find out.
I think he should do both.
Okay. Townsie girl wants to know what your chronic means, which is a good thing, and he wants me to read it, and because he's been so wonderful about coming onto the phone when we've asked him to, and I can do that for him, I'd be happy to perform that service since he's been kind enough to speak with us directly when we need that. So,
Teresa,
yeah.
Can you give the context? I mean, I'm not sure what he's written.
I'll give that in a moment. I'd like to see Townsie Girl get her question answered about what your chronic means before we move on.
Okay.
Anybody know?
Chris.
Like David?
Is that
maybe?
Me?
Yeah. You're anybody.
Oh. Did we do a chapter called Chief Weakness?
Not yet.
No?
No, not yet.
Was that in HPM?
No, it's later in the book.
It's in
so
this
who
book?
Said you're chronic? What's your chronic?
Okay.
The question
I
was
think
your
Sama
chronic.
Said you're chronic, yeah. And it's, right, so.
I would say my chronic is my victim place.
Can somebody say what? Maybe it sounds like you're saying you're a chronic.
You're a chronic.
Okay, now just a minute. Sama said, as it was explained to me, when you get worn down, both emotionally, mentally, physically, and your batteries are frayed, something else kicks in to carry you through. And Silverdale said, the chronic refers to the participation of the historic personality in linear time. And Sama says, but you're so tired that something else wants to manifest, freaks out. So that sounds like your habitual bent when you become triggered or out of balance. Silverdale says the alternative is the experience of the non-phenomenal self in spherical space where there is no perception of time. And Sinhog says it's spelled out in the human biological machine. And Sama says that particular way you manifest is your chronic. And so, Leona, that could be correct for you.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this being said, David, you asked for the context. The context of Silverdale's comment from the website, which I would like to read, is on the chapter Mentation, which we're discussing tonight, ostensibly. And he wanted to talk about the reference to the holy planet Purgatory, which is a point of confusion or obscurity to some folks. So I'd like to jump into that comment without further ado, if you agreed with that, David.
Well, we really didn't discuss the chapter at all last week. And it, at the end of the chapter is the context of the planet Purgatory. Go ahead and read it. We'll use that then as our jumping off point to get into the chapter.
Exactly. And it could go either way. We could start and go in, or we could go in and then start. So,
got it. So let's use it.
In the chapter Mentation.
Pardon?
In the chapter Mentation, we see a reference to the holy planet Purgatory. This is an excellent example of the point I've made before, namely the totality of E.J. Gold's Fourth Wave publications are based on and presume a prior knowledge and mastery of the totality of G.I. Gurdjieff's trilogy entitled All and Everything. By way of further explanation, in Gurdjieff's book Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, there's a chapter entitled The Holy Planet Purgatory, in which Beelzebub explains to his grandson exactly why and exactly how the Absolute created the now existing creation, as well as the purpose for which the Holy Planet Purgatory was established. The attentive reader will reverse engineer this data and information and subsequently apply it to himself or herself for their own beneficial evolutionary transformation. Furthermore, and in addition, it is then important to know that the book Practical Work on Self was first published in 1979 as the second volume of Secret Talks with Mr. G in a limited edition of 200 privately printed books. Interesting. This original material may have been written by Gurdjieff himself in the 1930s or 1940s and was only subsequently published by IDHHB in 1979. Volume 2 of Secret Talks with Mr. G, originally published in a limited private edition in 1979, was significantly edited and commercially published in 1989. This is the book that we are using for this class discussion. Editing as well as translation of written material will be more or less faithful to the original intent of the author, based on the knowledge, background, skill, and proficiency of the editor and/or translator. My intention in providing this background information is to encourage participants in this class to familiarize themselves directly with Gurdjieff's writings. A good introduction to the totality of Gurdjieff's ideas, although there are flaws in it, is P.D. Ouspensky's book In Search of the Miraculous.
Okay, is that it?
It is.
Okay.
So let's talk about the holy planet Purgatory a little bit. What do you think? What is it?
You know, at one point, Purgatory was for me a time when I recognized all the times that I didn't show love.
Wow, great.
That you didn't what?
Show love. So that was when I was in a religious place. And
yeah.
Purgatory was a place that you went to after you died, before you went to heaven, so to speak. And at that time, I got a really deep insight. I think it was a deep insight that if there was such a place that it would be for me, I would recognize all the times in my life that I could have showed love and I didn't.
That would be, if you were in that space, you would be in a space of purgatory?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's an incredible comment.
Pardon?
That's an incredible comment, because whether or not it refers to Gurdjieff and or EJ's intention about the holy planet purgatory, it's very much an experience that we have that, Leona, you're putting very beautifully and very concisely into words. And that experience of being kind of here but kind of not here, and in a place where, well, we're not really fully feeling or fully functioning because we're holding ourselves back. There's something very purgatorial about being in a place and holding love back, not allowing mm-hmm. ourselves to feel that.
Okay.
And that's a good piece of self-observation. Silverdale wrote, "Holy Planet Purgatory refers to those individuals who've developed all three of their centers and experience the absolute as if it were themselves."
And he's saying that is the Holy Planet Purgatory?
That's what it refers to. So that would be, it's an interesting language. Although I know nothing about it, I would say that why would it be a holy planet when you, I mean, Leona, what you're talking about is purgatory, but for it to be a holy planet purgatory, that's a whole different order of things than purgatory itself.
Right.
Well, in the book they talk about St. John of the Cross in the same sentence almost.
Well, yeah, the Dark Night of the Soul. I don't know the answer, but let me just say that in Western religious tradition, where there's a discussion of purgatory is in the Dante's Divine Comedy, and the second book is called Purgatory. And purgatory is a seven-story mountain, and each level is inhabited by people who have, and he uses it very, who have committed a sin in a certain way. Pride would be one, sloth, etc. And that during that phase, you cleanse that from you as you're working your way toward the next level. And in that, it's in that staying with that sense of lack, maybe in a sense we could call it, or that whatever that problem is that you're working with, that you purge it. You're purging it through a certain self-reflection. And in the chapter that we're talking about on page 102, I'd like to read that paragraph. It says, "Collected attention is our ticket on the trans-space ship in which we will enter into very deep meditation on the question of conscience, which we will call the Holy Planet Purgatory. And this exercise is also called, in past times, the Dark Night of the Soul, as was pointed out.
What are we calling the holy planet of purgatory? Conscience, or the journey, or the spaceship?
We will enter into the very deep meditation on the question of conscience, which we will call the holy planet purgatory.
Okay.
What I'm having trouble with is relating the idea of purgatory and purgation to this chapter called mentation.
Well, here's an interesting comment that's just right in there. Beelzebub from Silverdale. Beelzebub states, the holy planet purgatory is a, quote, paradise, but the inhabitants experience an inner state of anguish because they remain separate from union with the absolute. They must continue to perfect themselves in order to be reunited with the absolute.
This is exactly how I understand it. I don't understand it from the technical literature of Gurdjieff, but I actually understand it from Christian mysticism and the work of Dante, because that's exactly what he's talking about, is that you are placed in a position where in a certain way you can see the celestial position. You can see ahead of you, in a sense, you can see the Godhead, the rose and the flower of what the absolute is, and you reach toward it. It's the longing. There's a particular kind of longing that creates something in you that burns something away. It's the longing for it that creates what I call the precious, precious, you know, alchemical fire of cleansing. And we enter into the place, if we can get there, and that longing is sufficient, where we have what's called the cleansing radiations. Holding yourself in the cleansing radiation of that longing is the work of conscience. It's, as we were told earlier, it's hard to stay there. And yes, it is, but it's a worthy effort.
Ginger Rogers gave us a definition from Google Wikipedia. Purgatory is the condition or process of purification or temporary punishment in which souls who pass in a state of grace are made ready for heaven.
You know, this, like, I'd like to, what's coming to me right now, this is that, this happened to me when I was involved in religion, that kind of thought. The thought that's coming to me as you're talking right now is that everything that I've done in my life has been an act of love.
Okay.
Because you can't do anything else but, because in some way we are that in this world.
Well, it's a matter of degrees. One thing Mayor Baba says is that even hate is the lowest degree of love. It's on the scale from no love to great love. Hate isn't an absence of love, it's the absolute minimum on that scale.
Yeah. I'm just trying to totally see something completely, completely different.
Different than what?
Than the way I looked at it before.
Cool. So,
and I'm getting it as you're talking.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
See, there's a, when you, the Divine Comedy by Dante is stirring, to say the least. And it's this adventure where Dante is led by Virgil through these various levels of purgatory, and he's being led, consciously led, to the paradiso, the paradise, to heaven. And the purity that he, when he gets to that level, the angel says to him, we are so advanced, so pure, so evolved that you can't even see us from where you are. However, we will reduce ourselves to human form to help you in your voyage here. And it's that, in a certain way, it's that dichotomy between where our heart says we can wind up and we sense it with clarity, inner clarity. You sense it, that drives you forward, is what, for me, brings forth this power of conscience, and the cleansing can begin at that point. And that's preparing the vessel in a certain way.
So Choko Rococo said, conscience painfully realizes the discrepancy of what we are and what we would like to be. which is nice, and then as a struggle of the heart.
Uh-huh.
And Townsie Girl, so almost like burning away the sleep of the machine, yes? Which Silverdale agrees with.
Yeah. We have, one of the things we got into a very long discussion with.
Am
I okay?
I'll try it again.
Should I begin?
Yeah.
Townsie Girl, is that we and when we were doing Human Biological Machine, there was a great discussion about the fact that, in a sense, truly, we are electrical beings. And the electrical being, when exposed to higher cleansing radiations, does go through a cleansing process. And we talked about, way back in the chapter on Work Wish, remember that chapter? At the very end, it says something about, I wish for this effort to be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere. And then it says, so that it reverberates in your solar plexus. That movement, that exercise, is an electrical cleansing. If we can put ourselves in an environment where we can have electrical cleansing occur when that higher radiation is about us, absolutely, that's what occurs.
And we need to feel it for that to happen. Choko Rococo added, but all of this cleansing is contingent upon our own conscious self-reflection and efforts of purgation. Yes.
I love the name. Absolutely, absolutely. And
so
that's, go ahead.
Well, conscience can definitely be painful, but how are we going to get to the gateway of conscience if we're not able to first open the water and we're not able to have some objectivity in self-observation until we can observe and accept ourselves neutrally and bear our own sensations and bear our self-reflection, then conscience is pretty stiff medicine.
Yeah.
How does that connect to meditate rather than to mentate? Rather than to meditate.
Can you rephrase your question, please?
Well, like in this chapter, it talks about mentate, is that it?
Yes.
Okay. And it says it's different than meditating.
Because mentating is staying with the process, keeping yourself focused and on track and gathering your not just your thought, but your intention and your will and your presence of mind. It's, in a sense, a kind of a bearing. So if you were to, for instance, reflect upon your acts and how you felt about your acts, that would lead into conscience.
So mentation then would be looking at your acts and reflecting on that, and then that takes you into conscience?
It could. There are different places that it could take you. That's one of the places that it could tell, that it could take you.
Okay.
What do you have to say about that, David? How do we get from mentation to conscience? What's the segue there?
Mentation is to the work what the monkey wrench is to the mechanic.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think...
You monkey?
It was a monkey.
Yeah, I know.
Sinhog said mentate equals more visceral about being. And Silverdale says mentation is what the non-phenomenal self does the same way that thinking is what the historical personality does. So it's an octave on the it's an octave on thinking. A much
when we
more
read
gathered.
The chapter,
okay.
When we read the chapter, we can see that the author is telling us he's trying to help us understand the difference between what we normally call thinking and mentation. Thus, he uses a different word altogether. Just like chapters ago, he tried to help us understand the difference between what we normally call emotions and higher emotions. In that case, it was most of what we normally call emotions are just reactions. We like to talk about the ones that are painful, but it's also the ones that are pleasurable. Those often are reactions too. In the same way, our normal thinking, quote-unquote thinking process, is just associative thinking. Oh, look, there's a dog. I had a dog, and that dog was named Sparky. Wasn't that nice? And it's just, that's not thinking. That's just the ping pong ball going from one thought to the next thought to the next thought to the next thought. There's something else where you apply will to your thought process. And in that, you begin to actually think. He even uses the example of to look at an ashtray and just look at it and think about it. Don't react to it, but have a thought. And many of us have had the experience when we need to think about something, and there's a certain pain about that because we're out of the comfort zone of that reactive thinking process.
So can you tell me, David, can you tell me what's the difference in that than concentrating on the Om in meditation?
It's a collection of will rather than just a collection of attention. I'd like to read the comments for a minute. We'll come back to that. Choka Rococo, different term because it's linked to the conscience heart. Conscience arises with mentation as they're linked. And then Silverdale, when the mentation of the non-phenomenal self, which perceives unity, blends with the associative thinking of the historical personality, which perceives diversity and multiplicity, then conscience arrives, which perceives multiplicity, Choka Rococo added. So I'd say, and anyone can jump in and correct me if they like, I would say that the difference between concentrating on the Om is concentrate on the Om You don't necessarily have to be fully there to concentrate on a sound. And to mentate, you have to bring more parts of yourself into alignment because, you know, a person who's dissociated could even listen to the om, and they might center around it or they might not, but the process of mentation requires you to bring those elements into alignment and have some bearing on the process. Does that make sense?
Basically, when we talk about the idea of mentation, we're practicing developing something. We're trying to develop the higher mental force, and you actually consciously start to think about, like if you actually pause and think, well, what am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to do today now that I get up? Not just react to what you have to do or what you should have done or da-da-da-da, but you just focus, boom, boom, and you begin to apply will to your thinking process. That's different. Meditating also, or meditating on the om, as you put it, is also, it's an exercise of being. It's a different form of discipline. We're distinguishing that from actually using the mental centrum. And I believe it's a different play. Mm-hmm. And as Teresa's telling us, brings forth the idea of will.
Mark Roach said that chanting or repeating om is designed for merging with something, which is a good, you know, it's designed for merging with something. It's different. Mentation, uh-huh. Mark Roach continues, is more like deep objective analysis and consideration. And Silverdale, conscience is the either the grief that the absolute feels as a result of the messiness of creation for which he's responsible, or a type of affection for creation which is a reflection of him or herself.
Thanks.
And Ginger Rogers, and that would be purgatorial, holy planet purgatory, to be in both of those places at once, maybe. My footnote. Ginger Rogers' om is a good place, very versatile vehicle for traveling very well. Plus, it's only two words long, easy to remember even under stress. Two letters, I mean, letters. So we're at 3:58. I suggest that we break at this point to change the tape and the recording, if that suits.
Marvette's not here to change the tape.
Well, I need to change the recording, so give me a moment anyway.
All right. Go ahead.